So, my name is Noor Mood, and I would like to talk about Islam 101 today. And I know you have a lot of questions right now, and by the end of the presentation, you will have more questions, for sure. But, to, you know, there's nothing, you know, there's no stupid question. As long as you have a question, feel free. I'm not going to feel offended, you know. So, and if I have the answer, I will give it to you. And also, I would like to give you a heads up. During my presentations, there will be prayer time. And we did it on purpose, you know, so I might excuse the person at the corner or by that door, the closed door, and face that direction because we have a technology, the apps that shows us where we're supposed to face, you know, thanks to the Apple or Samsung or technology, anyway, Silicon Valley team. So I would like to start with a question. What is the Islam? What is the meaning of Islam? So, just a quick raise your hand if you know. What does Islam mean? Raise your hand. Quick, anyone can answer the question. Peace. Walker, did you raise your hand?
Yeah.
Okay.
Submission.
Correct. And in another? Submission. He says submission, which is good, which is true. And it has also another meaning.
Peace,
that's all too. So salam, Islam came from the word in Arabic salam, which means peace and also submission to one God. So, you know, the PowerPoint didn't let me separate the two questions, but my plan was to ask the second question. A lot of people got confused about Islam and Muslim. Sometimes people asking me, you're Islam, right? I was like, nope. And then they don't ask me, who are you? They say, like, okay, are you Buddhist or Hindus or what, Christian? I was like, nope. Atheist, nope. And then later I was like, I'm a Muslim. And they're like, we say that, right? I was like, no, you said Islam, which is, that's a religion. But the Muslims are the ones who adopted the Islamic way of loving or believing in one God. And also, not only that, but also you have to believe the last prophet of, we believe so many prophets. And the last, I'll talk about it later, but Prophet Muhammad as the last messenger and prophet. Some prophets, they had just as a prophet title, but there was a few had prophet and messenger. The messenger is the one comes with, sent to the people to guide them. But the prophet was like more, in definition, just a person became more holy spiritual leader for his tribe or region. But messenger either was given by a book or I was sent by to the nation people to be the guy. So Prophet Muhammad was both the messenger and the prophet. Peace be upon him. And this is peace be upon him. So if I mention Moses, David, Aaron, any prophets, I have to say afterward after them. So that makes I'm differentiating before the Muhammad who lives right now somewhere in Minnesota and the Prophet Muhammad. That's the difference when I say Muhammad. If I add this, that means I'm talking about the prophet. Oh, sorry if you cannot see it. So we have principles of Islam, and usually, a lot most of you, well, I know for sure you already know, is Islam is kind of monotheistic religion, belief in one God. And Muslims, when they say Allah, a lot of people they will say like, oh, you don't believe a God, but you believe Allah. That is the same. It doesn't make sense. Because, you know, I mentioned also, you know, on Monday, I think, or Tuesday, my other session is, if you're Arab, Catholic, or Lutheran, or Coptic, or, you know, Greek Orthodox, and you speak Arabic, so your first language, that's the word you use for your God, Allah. And there's another term, this Rab in Arabic, and we use Rabbi too. There's hundreds, the word Rab in the Quran too. So, that's his language. But a lot of people say like, oh, Muslims, they love Allah. Of course, yes, but also we use the God too, you know? So that's the same. Don't get confused about that. Don't differentiate because labeling Allah just for Muslims because the Arab Christians, they will feel sad and they will get mad about you. I have a lot of Arab friends, so. So why the oneness of God? Because, you know, that we believe, you know, we have Quran and there's two things we believe. There's a hadith and there's a Quran. Quran is the words of Allah or God that revealed to the through Gabriel angel Gabriel, to Prophet Muhammad. Literally came from God, the Quran. And the God, we believe he is the one, and there is no other gods. And this is one of the chapters in the Quran, one of the very smallest chapters in the Quran, chapter 112, and it's just 4 verses. And that defines who God is and where God came from, and you know, so that's as simple as that. And as a Muslim, there's something we call Arkanul Islam in terms, the Arabic term, but you know, the 5 pillars of Islam. So the first one is testimony of faith, which is Shahada. The person, as long as he says, I believe in God, one God, but doesn't practice, drink is, eat is pork, do whatever they want, but believes, as I mentioned last day, the other day, that person would be bad, but at the end of the day, the hereafter, even that person faces some tests of the hell, but eventually will end up the heaven because he believes in oneness of God. But as a Muslim, when I claim I'm a practicing Muslim, I have to get them all right. I have to practice them. I have to, you know, see myself practicing all of them. So that is the first one, believing in God. That, you know, the second one is the prayers. You'll see me soon when I will be praying. And the prayers are 5 times a day. And we believe the time of prophets, like Abraham, and the time after that, you know, the other prophets, they used to pray so many prayers. But to us, because we are the nation, you know, people are kind of lazy people, so it's just a 5 prayers. And each prayer is 5 to 7 minutes. But the one I'm going to pray here is going to be, as a traveler, I have excuse to make it shorter, half. So I'll be combining 2 prayers very quick, and it won't take me 3 to 4 minutes. So be patient while I'm praying. And so the third one is a charity. You know, we have to pay charity. There's 2 different charities. People got confused. One is just if I have $1 or $2 or $10 and see someone poor on the street, giving to that is charity. But there's another charity, and we call Zakatul Mal, which is whatever income you make annually, 2.5% you have to give to charity. Not to your own people, not to your cousin, not to your people of the same race or same faith, but anyone who is in need. I cannot give it to my cousin who wants to open the new business. Say, you know what? My 2.5 will go to you later. You know, give it to your next year. The 2.5 of yours, when you make money, give it to my cousin. So let's circle around the money just to the family. Nah, it's the poor. It has to go to the poor. So the animal, even the woman, if she has a goal, it counts as a wealth. It counts as a commodity. They have to value it as an income. And then the pay as a charity, 2.5. But this charity is more like giving anyone who's in need just whatever you can. Food, shelter, clothes, anything. And sometimes some scholars, they define charity just saying good words to be kind to others. It's a charity. The kind word is also, the Prophet Muhammad said, the kind word, saying to someone, kind word is a charity, part of charity. So you're giving charity, not physical, something wealth or money, but you're giving something better than that. Number 4 is fasting. You know, there's a Hunger Games month the Muslims face every year, once a year, you know. And especially if you live in Minnesota, Alaska, Iceland, and Sweden are the toughest places to survive during Ramadan, because 18, 19, 20, 21 hours out of 24 hours, you'll be fasting. And you're not allowed to have a water or drink anything, or even put a gum in your mouth, just so you can brush your teeth, nothing else, from sunrise to sunset. But scholars, they say, you know what, we cannot see the people survive, you know, suffering. So like, people from Alaska, they can break fasting, even though the sun is still, they can see but they can fast in the closest geographical region, maybe Russia, somewhere, the time they break fast. If it is better than Alaska time. If not, it's still the same, then they have to look at the other, maybe Washington State, this way or the other ways. So, but you have to fast. And who can fast? Anyone who is physically, mentally healthy, in terms of health, is able to fast. Like if you are sick in the hospital, you don't have to fast. But you can give the money you could spend in your break and fast a meal, you have to give it to the poor. the woman who is in the situation of in monthly situation period, she's not allowed to fast within those 5 days or pray, but the fasting, she has to make them up after Ramadan sometime. And the traveler, if Ramadan is now, it's Ramadan, I'm here, I'm allowed to eat if I want. But I have to make up those days. And I was in Europe last Ramadan in June and May, and still I remember 10 days I was eating while people fasted there. So, but sometime before next Ramadan, I have to fast, make them up. So the last one, number 5, is going to Hajj, pilgrimage, just to Mecca. This is if you can afford financially. It's not about you have to. So this comes with if you can afford. So I would like to take a break, 3 minutes, and you can watch me. And I just want to give you a little example about how am I going to pray. Usually the prayer time for the noon and the one around 4 o'clock, I'm combining because as traveler, we can combine 2 prayers together. But the one noon, the one around 12:30 or 1 o'clock, is supposed to be, I'm supposed to get up 4 times. But now, when I get up 2 times, I'm sit, I will done, finish the prayer. And then get up for the one around 4 o'clock. And then do 2, because this prayer at afternoon one is supposed to be 4 times, get up 4 times. And the one around 4 o'clock is supposed to be 4 times. But the one, the sunset is 3 times. The one at night, around 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, is 4 times. The one in the morning, 5 in the morning, is 2 times. So, this one, the one the 4, that was around 1 o'clock, and the one is supposed to be around 4:30, I'm combining them now. Not connecting them, but each I will pray each one separate, within 2 times getting up, finish, and then pray the one around 4:30, do the same thing, and then finish, and then I will get back to the podium. And also, these 2 prayers, I don't have to recite out loud, so you don't have to hear. You will hear saying me, Allahu Akbar, which means God is greatest. But the one, the sunset, if this time was sunset, or the night one, you will see me chanting or reciting Quran out loud. Like Terry was talking about, you know, hearing the microphone in Palestine, how the imam was reciting the verses. That was, you know, a lot of the night and the sunset one is out, you know, imams, everybody has to read out loud. But the afternoon one, the 2 I'm just combining now, you don't have to read out loud during the prayer, but you can say Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, and Salaam Alaikum, Salaam Alaikum, which is the finish. So forgive me, I will take 2-3 minutes, but still you can watch me, you know. Okay? No, just I can. Okay. So, and it starts with Allahu Akbar. That's as soon as I say Allahu Akbar, no matter what, if John tries to talk to me, I cannot answer. Yeah, for sure. You know, there is no way I can communicate outside the world unless I see, like, you know, something horrible, maybe a lion or bear comes to my way, I might run to save my life. But there is no way I can respond or talk to anyone until I finish. And that's because that's the time we believe.
I'll watch the door.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Sami'a Allahu liman hamidah. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Sami'a Allahu liman hamidah. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. So I'm doing the other one now. So one, I finish one. The other 2. And I can talk. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Sami'a Allahu liman hamidah. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Sami'a Allahu liman hamidah. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar.
Allahu Akbar.
Allahu Akbar. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Josh, you can come in. So, thank you. So thanks for the for being patient, and thanks for everyone for me. And so the reason, there was a few things I was reading, and when I put my face on the ground, I was asking forgiveness and mercy for the God. And also when I was doing the last sitting before I said Salaam Alaikum, finish, there was a prayer. But at the end of the part, it talks about how Abraham and his nation used to pray, made me become practiced and prayer the way that Abraham and his people used to pray. So follow their footsteps. So the Hajj, those are two holidays. In terms of other holidays, there are two holidays. And John, remind me when I have a 10 minutes or 15 minutes left, if you don't mind, or anyone. Yeah. Okay, so there's two holidays, and there's the one Eid al-Adha. That's the one we're going to have this year, September 1st. And I mentioned a few times in the past, in my previous sessions, and it started from the time of Abraham, when he was sacrificing, was commanded to sacrifice his son, but God replaced the goat or sheep. And that is coming up soon, so on September 1st. But the other holiday is the day after Ramadan is over. And this is the second Eid of fast prayer, which is kind of celebrating the month of Ramadan. It's the end of the Ramadan. But if you put a balance, which one is more important, the first one is more important. But the people celebrate more the other one because it's a celebration of Hunger Games, of 30 days of surviving. But if you live in the Muslim countries, you can see both. But here in the Western, you won't see any people. Everybody maybe goes to the mosque for 2 hours prayer and get back to work. So you're not going to see a lot of celebrations at all. But if you live in Minnesota, especially the Twin Cities area, if you go to Mall of America, don't go those days. There will be like 1,000 kids. And they hired all the Bloomington police, volunteers, securities, to take care of or serve the community. Because that's what every kid wants to go that day. So it's overcrowded in Mall of America. So I usually don't go there that day, those days. So, and there's also six beliefs that some after the five, there's a six. And the first one is, still, again, is believing one God. But the second one is also we have to believe angels, like Gabriel. And someone like the one who takes away the life from when the person is dying. The one who, after the hair fire, the one we believe that after the death, if the person goes to the grave, we'll talk about the death at the end of this PowerPoint. But also, there's an angels work at the paradise or at the heavens, and the other one's in the hells. And those angels, two angels right now, we believe they are on the right shoulder and the left shoulder. The writing, if you do bad deeds, this one is writing. And if you do good deeds, the other one's writing. So by the time we die, we have our performance review right there. By the way, I submitted my performance review last week to my boss, Chaplain Nancy. So I get good points. So, and I hope the other one I'm going to pass. So, and the third one is we have to believe not Quran, but also, the Bible, Torah, and Zabur, the one. So we believe that David had a book. It was mentioned in the Quran. And Jesus had a book, holy book, and Moses had a holy book, and this was the last one, the Quran. So if Muslims are not, don't believe, if they skip one, they're not a Muslim. I'm not going to say they're not Muslim, but they're not following the religion of Islam. So after the first five, this is the second top requirement, principles of Islam. Six, you have to believe all of them. And we believe, also there's the day of judgment. When every prophet, every with line up with his nations, and people, even every single soul will be tested, and people will be divided to the anyone who done a good deed, and anyone who the bad, people will be separated, And we believe predestinations. We believe that if tomorrow something happens to me that was written by God, and we believe if. For example, my wife is here in the future. Like last time, we discussed about having kids. But if you don't get it, it was written to God, by God. So everything that we face or we got, it's not about, we did it, I did it. It's about, it's from God. And we have to believe that. And we believe that before we were born, God written everything for us, for each person, that the world will get or will make him. So, going back to the Quran, you know, so, and also, the Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad, you know, in the first one is not just defining the Quran, but the second one, as you said, was 23 years, 13 years in Mecca, I think it was two cities, Medina and Mecca. So one 13 years, the other one is 10 years. So those 23 years was revealed by verses or by chapter, or it could be like, you know, sometimes like when it's the same day, different verses. And the Quran, the book is 114 chapters. But one chapter could be like 10 pages. One chapter could be three lines, like the one I showed you, the first one, about the oneness of God. So some chapters are small, some chapters are long. But that's the Quran. That's the words of our God, or words of Allah. That's his words. But hadith is everything that Prophet Muhammad said or did in action. Like, for example, in terms of just, it is, you know, like it, as simple as just when we eat it, you know, we use the right hand. Even if you're left-handed, but still we use it the left. If we're given the charity, we don't have to give it on the left, we give it to the right. So that's the we call hadith. It came from the Prophet. That's the way of his life. So following his footsteps, or the actions he's done it, or what he said, then that's a hadith. So Muslims, we believe Quran, the words of Allah, there's nothing else was added. But anything else that we do in our daily life is outside the Quran is a hadith, which is the practice of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Okay, you know, it's not about the political, but it's about when we heard the word, the Muslim ban, a lot of people say that the Muslim majority countries. But if you look at, you know, there's the countries have, you know, that's true, but like India, Indonesia, if you look at, you know, the Middle East, there's Middle East somewhere here, yep, this area, but there are 5% of Muslim world, just 5%. 95% are here, just Indonesia by itself. Their total population a few years ago was 200 million. 180 million were Muslims and 200 million they were non-Muslims. But this is, as you can see the percentage here, these are 21% up to 100% with the red ones. So if you look at the map in general, these are the red ones are the world countries. They have a lot of Muslim population. And people, when they hear the word Muslim, they assume the Gulf countries. But if you look at India, even though it's yellow, has more Muslims than this area. And Pakistan, Afghanistan. But they have the image of the center. They are the Muslim world, you know, place for them. So geographically, in the United States here is about 3%, but sometimes it's at 2.5%, you know. But I'm not sure about that. So who are Muslim Americans? So a lot of people get confused about who are Muslim. A lot of people, they think it's just for immigrants that are Muslims, or the celebrities like Muhammad Ali or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or those kind of the big names. But the Muslims has been here for a long time in America. And even the African American who were brought this as a slavery, they were Muslims. And some of them. And they have all races, all different, like, you know, like Caucasian, African American, Latinos, everyone. So Muslim is not about who has the person who has the accent like me or immigrant, raised an immigrant or anything like that. It's about, they have all different walk of life, doctors, engineers, you know, scientists. So it's very tough to define a specific or label to a specific group, you know, if you want to talk about the American Muslims. So some they were born, some they are, you know, so this is the kind of like a little summarizing immigrants, just like me. I can't fit the first point. Iran is a Muslim, but some of them were born here. So the question is, who can answer that question? Who can answer that question? And if you could add, if you can tell me the year and the state, I know a lot of people won't expect the state. It's kind of like, I wouldn't even, like try that state, had that mosque, the first mosque, but anyone can try it. What?
Is it Michigan?
No, that's, they have a lot of Middle Eastern population.
I got the state. What? I got the state, not the year.
Yeah, try.
Do you want me to do it?
Yeah, say it.
North this. Dakota?
That's yep, that's right. North Dakota. Yep, there's a small town. I forget the name. You can Google it. What about the year?
1919.
It's the 1932.
Yeah.
But there was Iowa. Also, there was a mosque in Iowa, but it was kind of center in Iowa. But as a mosque, this is a mosque that was built. There was 1932 in North Dakota, the small town. I don't know why. So, I would like, a lot of people, they get confused about the Sharia. They say, I've seen in the media, don't bring us the Sharia. Just like the word jihad. You know, a lot of people can confuse jihad and the real definition of jihad. The way Allah and God. You know, a lot of people are confused. But the Sharia, I just want to tell you, and later you can ask me questions. Sharia, that's exactly the definition of Sharia. You know, but, you know, as a, and also it came to the time, this is the time of Prophet Muhammad, the 7th century of, you know, or was it the time when the Prophet became a prophethood, you know, and we could get the message. So as a Muslim American living in Minnesota, you know, my Sharia says, you have to follow the law of the land. As long as it is not going to contradict or not going to let me practice my faith. And we have already amendments, you know, we have a, what do you call, Bill of Rights or something like that? What you, or a practice, of, you can practice any religion you want. So as long as I'm able to pray 5 times a day, nobody's forcing me to eat the pork or drink, you know, I have to follow the law of the land. And that is, and I have to, so the, our president, our Phoebe, our Congress, Senate, anything they put to forward, I have to obey. It doesn't matter. It could be under the Christian philosophy, it could be any other in religion, I have to obey. And I can give you a best example. When Prophet Muhammad became a prophet, the first few years he got tortured, he was stoned, and then he got a few companions. What he did was immigration. We're going to talk about immigration. He sent the first group to the king who was Christian in Ethiopia. Most of you didn't know the, you know, most of you know the history. He said, we're suffering. We're getting killed. Could you guys go explore the Ard al-Habash in Arabic, which is the what we call Somali Ethiopia, those East African, it's called the Habash land, which is like, or they may have a different name in English. Go there. There's a king who is for justice, who is very caring to all people of faith. He's very nice. Son and God see him. The people, they crossed the Red Sea, and that time may not be, that was not that long, the Red Sea. Came to the land, and they say, you know, we are the Muslims, and we got Prophet Muhammad in Mecca, and we came to you to seek refuge. He welcomed them, gave them best hospitality, and said, you know what, I will build a mosque for you. It's something we can, you can do whatever, you can practice whatever you want. And that king, when he passed away, the Prophet Muhammad prayed for him in Mecca, for him, asking God for mercy for him, the way he welcomed for his refugees. So that is another part. So we, and so they followed, even the companions, when they went to the Ethiopia, they followed the law of the land of the king. And that was part, you know. So, and this is one of the verses in the Quran, talks about the justice and so Islam versus terrorism. Because I said Islam, peace, and submission, and that is exactly Islam, love, mercy, and peace. Terrorism is the totally opposite Islam because they terrorize people and they kill more Muslims than anyone else. They kill because there's the first I will show you in the Quran or here. This verse is, it says that. But they kill more human or mankind. Every day, they blow up themselves. But at the same time, they use the name of Allah and it became the brand name for them, the marketing name to use to recruit the kids. Because if they would have a different, you know, the recruiting system, they would nobody would join with them. So they have to claim as a Muslim. And they have to use the word Allah every single 20 seconds. You can, if you watch them and see them, they keep saying Allah, Allah, Allah. You know. So, but in the Quran, if you open up, that's what you're going to say a lot. So, totally, scholars, they agreed. And, you know, they're the disbelievers. So, in Islam, when people are harming the community, there's the most well-educated sheikh or imam can fatwa, can call it fatwa. So say, you know what, they're disbelievers. And a lot of people, they call that. They don't follow the practice of Islam. So, life after death. This is one of my last slides, so I will be ready for questions. So, we believe this is the world's kind of short-term life. We believe every single thing we do it or think or say it or even the steps we take it, if we go to do something good, it counts to good. If we go to harm someone, it counts towards against us. Just taking steps, saying it, everything. So by the time we die, there will be questions, this is what you've done and this is what you've done for the good and this bad. We'll be balanced and we will end up whatever is heavier. It's heavy. And that day, if you try to lie, even your tongue will say something against you. Will be the first witness. You don't have to have 2 or 3 witnesses from somewhere else. Your legs will say, we went there. Your eyes will say, like, we've seen that. Your hands will say, we participated in that. I did that. So the person won't have an excuse at all. And that question starts right after we put the body put in the grave. And we will leave it, the last person, as soon the last person leaves, that's when the person realizes where he's going to go, the rest of the internal, you know, where this. If that person was good, he will get positive messages, questions, answered easily. And that person will believe, as I mentioned 2 days ago, has to believe just a God, creator, will save him from hell to the heaven. It doesn't matter, it doesn't have to be a Muslim. But he believes in God. But everybody, we are human beings. We do mistakes. I do mistakes. I'm not perfect. But still, I know it counts against me. But I try to do much like more good deeds than bad. Because when I do bad, I try to do something good. So later, my balance, you know, goes better. You know, looks better. So, and that's the purpose we believe. The God, he created the heaven and the hell for a purpose. And the God, one of the first in the Quran says, I didn't create you. You know, I created a human being and the mankind, you know, to worship me. And that's the purpose, to worship me. If not, then to see, you know, the consequences. So this is the... Any questions? I got the first question.
I have 2 quick questions. One is, do women always pray in the same manner that you pray and as often? And the second question is... Is God
male? The second question is very tough and philosophic. It's a very philosophical question. I've seen scholars face with challenges because the terms he uses, he or we, in the Quran. So I'll try to answer that one. But let me say the question again in case someone didn't hear the question. The first question was, do the women pray just like a man? Really the same thing, do the same thing, right? And the second was, is the God, he, describing as in terms of a gender was male, or something else, right? Okay, to answer the first question, in front of God, female, male, we are all the same. He created equal. And when I say Allah Akbar, they say the same thing till the end. We pray the same, we do the same. But during the prayer, guys go first, and the female pray in the back. And that's a more like logical thing. Scholars, when they was asked what is the purpose behind not women being next to the man or not women is not an imam, don't lead the prayer. The scholars, they say, you know, this is the only time you pray when you say Allah, but you're communicating directly to God. So you don't have to social or interact with anything outside me, you and your God. But when the group of Muslims are praying, and the woman is right in front of you, and we're bowing down like this, your intention goes where? If, because you don't have to. My boss is like, I don't know. So, and the other thing is, so because the intention you have to keep, even for me, when I was praying, sometimes I had like, okay, don't, you may run out of time. You have to do it. I shouldn't even think about it that way. You know, so make it faster. I shouldn't think about that way too. But also people say like the woman, if she's the imam or point out that, you know, it would impact the person's spiritual communication. But there's always divided in between. Sometimes some mosques in Minneapolis, there's no divider, but they can see each other. But the male goes first, and the woman prays in the back. So that's the reason.
Are you saying women are a distraction?
The scholars, I'm not saying it, but a lot of people, they say, scholars, they say like, you know, if opposite gender, not female, male, even the male, if guys go to the back and sit with the women, there will be some distraction among them, one another. Not only guys have to skip on women, but also women, if she's praying the prayer time, those 5 to 4 to 5 or 6 minutes, if she's praying next to the guy, you know, physically attractive or anything like that or whatever, it will impact her prayer for that 4 minutes or 5 minutes. So the other question.
Yeah.
That was very, really difficult. And I'm going to try it based on what I hear from scholars. I'm not an imam. I'm neither imam nor sheikh. The guy in the Quran says many times he, you know, he will or we. But as the first verse, as the first slide says, this is where we stop. You know. Yep, this one. So it says him at the end. You see? But we cannot say God is kind of invisible. We cannot describe him. We cannot say his hand or his eyes, even though he sees us. Those are, this is like, you know, pray as you can see God. Even though we cannot see, literally we cannot see God. If you cannot see him, he sees you. You know, that's hadith. So we cannot see him. So, but you will see God will take them. Literally, when someone takes, if I want to take this chair philosophically, I have to use my hands. Right? But what does that take mean? You know? So it's very tough to answer those kind of questions. But we know we cannot describe anything with him. We cannot describe anything. We cannot relate to any gender or anything, hand, eyes, or physical. We cannot describe. We're not allowed to say that. You know, it's him or her or they. You know, we cannot say that to God. You know? And there's nowhere for 114 chapters in the Quran with 6,000, almost 7,000 verses in the Quran says, it talks about the gender or eyes or physical body of God. Josh?
Can you describe the 99 beautiful names, kind of connects with that, and then the term the people of the book?
Okay, that's a great question. God has 99 names. And one of the names is just my name too. It's the mine, the 93 one. And it's a Nur, which is the light. I might not be light, but it's a light, was one of the names. Merciful, the most merciful. The kind. And the one for the forgiver. You know, the most powerful. And all that has all the 99 names of God.
Specifically 99, or is that symbolic?
It's specifically 99 names. And those all mentioned in the Quran. Not next to each other all line up, but different verses, different areas. You know? And the second part was
the term the people of the book.
Okay. You know that when here, the people of the book came from this. Believe in the holy books. So there's a lot of things as a Muslim we required. And there was some challenges being a Muslim American here in America. A lot of people, they ask scholars, can I do this? Can I eat this? Because the people of the book are the Jewish, the Abrahamic tradition. It's the Jewish, Christian, and Muslims. So if Rabbi Esther slaughters meat, I'm allowed to eat that meat. It's halal for me. Because she believes in God. She's a Jewish. So therefore, I'm allowed to eat anything she cooks. Not anything, because I know she doesn't eat pork, but anything outside of pork. So, Chaplain Nancy, she's a Christian, she's the people of the book. Therefore, if she cooks for me beef, try when they invite me. I had a Thanksgiving. Yeah, exactly. So, I can eat. But here's the challenge part. If the person is atheist or anything else, like if the person doesn't believe anything at all, or believes God or something else, you know, and that person makes meat for me, I'm not allowed to eat. I'm like, I cannot eat. And also, I'm not allowed to marry. Yeah. But I'm allowed to marry the Christian and Jewish. Wow. Yeah. Where? Who said why? Oh, because they are part of the people of the book, Christian, Jewish, and Muslims. And also, and not only food, so the scholars ask people, there was some conservative, always if religion, there's some conservative, some more moderate, right? Liberal. So the Muslim conservatives in Minnesota, somebody asked, okay, there's a meat and chicken legs in Walmart. How are we going to know if that chicken is halal? Who is slaughtered? So the scholars, they say, don't look at, if you go to Walmart and ask them, where did you get that meat? We'll tell you, we may get from Jenny or the company processed the meat. And then if you talk to Jenny or they will say, we got that, was already slaughtered, we got from somewhere. So you don't have to trace back with the original who slaughtered first, you know? And figure out, you don't have to, that's not your job. Take the bigger picture, where do you live? United States. Are they Christian in general or atheist or not? So they are Christian in general. So don't think about it. I don't want to figure out if Luther is slaughtered, and Luther, by the way, is my professor sitting there. So it's slaughtered, and what did he believe? What does he believe? I don't have to. So scholars, they said, don't even think, go back that way. If you live in a little town, you don't have to ask it. Got it? Think about the bigger picture. America is a Christian country. Therefore, you can eat their food. Not the pork and the alcohol. And I didn't talk about the alcohol and food on my PowerPoint, sorry. But still, you can ask me anything like that. Okay, there's three, and I think four. Okay, John, you two, I'll go back to you.
I'm just here to tell you have 15 minutes left.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Thank you so much.
You can find somebody else.
Noura, I really appreciate you being here. And,
oh, thank you so much for having me.
You know, being among a Christian community and sharing the Muslim faith, it's really, I've learned a lot. And
thanks for having me.
I'm curious, I saw you pray, and your prayers are similar to prayers that I do, and that there's a routine, and I don't pray as often as you do during the course of the day. One thing I do is I will meditate and speak with God when I'm meditating, long periods of silence. And I was just wondering if you as a Muslim have practices somewhat similar or the same, or if you do that?
So this is a great question. There's things we are allowed to do, and there's something it contradicts our faith practices. For example, you know, when it comes to communicating God, you know, you can communicate individually from your person to God directly, like the way I was doing there with no other group. And the prayer that was set 5 times a day, I have to pray. Whether I pray with a group or individual. It's better when it's as a group, but it's still individual you can pray. So there's things you can do also. You know, those are not literally what we call now yoga, because the scholars, they say like you're practicing another faith. And that contradicts your prayer, you know. But if I sit somewhere, not having my mind just because I'm practicing yoga, but just this is the way of putting more effort to listen my heart to my, you know, my prayer, and to test myself to, you know, like not test, but that's another word, just when you do something for the whole day and tonight and at night you want to think back what you've done for the day, just to like reflect for yourself. That's yes. But if I say I'm gonna pray here and then I will do yoga. And the yoga, the person's leading, assuming it's practicing, it came from kind of Buddhist or Christian or somewhere else, then that is contradicting. But if I sit by myself in the middle of the nature, with a beautiful place, and my intention is to sit and reflect on myself and think about the deeds and what I've done and ask for forgiveness. You don't have to read it over your mouth, but mentally thinking, that is okay. But not as a prayer. But you can do this, something you can do more outside the prayer.
And that's what I guess I was referring, thinking of, listening. You know, prayer is an active thing where you're speaking to God.
Yes.
And meditation is, at least for me, it's more of a listening for the voice of God.
Yeah. So, you know, we do this prayer, but reflecting is okay. Because the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said, "Hasabu anfusakum qabla an tuhasabu," which means reflect yourself before God reflects you, before you face the test one. Do yourself, to yourself. So it's good to every day what you've done, think about and reflect yourself, and then so you can do it better next time. And that is the way you can you yourself testing it to make better, to do better, not to make better.
Curious about at what age children start the prayer practice?
As young as they can. Like for example, my nephew started praying, I think, when he was 7. You know, as soon as they're little, they see people praying. So they have no idea what they're doing it, but they got up next to the parents, do this, you know, they started doing that. But understanding the prayer, usually, it's, they have to be mature, first of all, in order to fast or pray. Because they have to understand what they're doing and what they're doing, you know. So boys usually start, you know, 8, 9, 10. But the girls, they're not required. If they are mature, yes. But unless for the Ramadan, fasting is when they got period. It doesn't matter if it's a 9 or 10. That's when it becomes required to the fasting. But if it's challenging time, of course, 18 hours, 20 hours, and the girl is 10 years old, but it's still, it's permissible. It's not about you have to. There's no other choice. It's about how, because the consequence will be worse because the health-wise. But this, the kid cannot survive 17 hours fasting. So then you will be next. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
I'm so curious about this beautiful dress that Warda wears. And I've ask her a little bit about it. So I would like to know more about, I mean, my understanding is that girls start wearing hijab when they're 10, 15? Tell me about that.
People get, this is the great question. If you look at Islam, what it says, and if you see like each country, the way they do their own way of the culture way, their own culture way. If you like Indonesian girl, if I see Muslims from Indonesia, Middle East, and Africa, I can tell which country they come from based on how they dress up. But the religion says modesty. That's it.
No.
So they have to cover the hair, the chest, you know, everywhere in their body except the hands and feet and you know, the face. They don't have to cover. But at home, when they have the in front of brothers, father, uncles, they can take off everything. Mm-hmm. But not the second cousins or cousins. They're not allowed. They still have to cover.
Is it because of distraction?
No, because they can't marry to each other. Islamic, the cousins, they can marry each other. And it's, but the uncle, he cannot marry his niece. And brother, he cannot. So anything like those family, close family, the girl, she can take care of everything inside the house. But outside, she has to cover head to toe. Well, not toe, but up to, you know. And it's a modest. But if you look at each country uses different way. If you go to Minneapolis, you will see Somalis not dressed up like Warda. Warda, she's just wearing this small hijab. You know, but you will see Somalis wearing from big, huge one, and you know, like feel it's like the one is the Afghanistan, not literally the one that the Afghanistan people wear, but closer to that one. How big it is, and you won't see them the arms, everything. That's a culture. It's not about the religion. That's what the Somalis they wear. If you look Indonesia or Malaysia, they wear scarf that little bit smaller than that, and very tiny, small. Yep, they wear. If you look at Saudi, where my wife came from, but she's not from Saudis, but they cover even the face because that's the culturally that's how they are governed. Mm-hmm. If you look at Bangladesh or Pakistan, you will see, most of you might have been there, you can see their hair halfway through here.
Yeah.
So it is about not Islam, it's about who you're talking to and what country, you know. It's about that. But the main thing is modesty, they have to cover the body and the hair. That's, but it's up to them what kind of clothes and how big and how fashion it is. Sometimes it's fashion, if you look at the design and colors. I think there was a question right behind the last.
Thank you for so much you've shared. And I'm an educator in schools, and I'm always thinking, I hear many places where maybe there's some contradictions for our students when they come into the school. Are there things that you could just say that we can try to do in our own school communities that would just make it better for students and for families?
Okay, so if you don't mind, I work in higher ed too, college. So which grade level?
I'm in elementary.
Okay, elementary.
But it's K, yeah.
K-12, so there are a lot of Muslim population there?
A small population, so not large population.
And it depends, going back to the previous question, it depends. If they're from India, Pakistan, they're fine. The girls don't have to wear until they got 15, 13, 14. Sometimes till they graduate from high school. Because to them it's like she's not ready for marriage, therefore she can, you know. So it is after. But if your neighborhood or the school, you know, that students are from East Africa or Middle East, then you will see wearing hijab early age, like as young as like 6 years old, first grade. And for them, you cannot make them take off, but they have to understand. And kids, they ask questions a lot, I know, I understand. And some kids, they wear it, but they have no idea. If you ask them, they have no idea. Because the parents, they put them on their head, they never explain to them. But it would have been nice, as an educator, if you invite all the parents with the different backgrounds, invite them and have a kind of like PowerPoint slide and say, this is the purpose. And educate them each other. And so they can respect each other. So that's the best way. That's my personal advice. So the question. There's the one here. Second row.
Okay. If a woman, a Muslim woman, doesn't want to cover herself all the way, what is the consequence?
That's a great question. You will see Muslims, even we have in our college, who don't wear the hair scarf, wear like shorts, sometimes, you know. But I am not the one who to judge, but usually the girls, they say we are Muslim or they practice Islam. But to them, it's just like, you know, it's personal choice. But you will see them when Ramadan comes, they cover and fast. You know? So 1 month out of the whole 12 months, you will see when Ramadan comes, they start covering and they can fast. And then after Ramadan is over, they throw away. So it's a personal choice. But religiously, the consequence is kind of like doing bad deeds, but it's not like something you get out of the religion. You're not. You can still claim the Muslim, but you're doing something you're not supposed to do. But it's not like us doing adultery, sex. That is adultery, that's a sin. But taking off is not a sin, it's but mistake, you're doing mistake. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Because that's the question, because we cannot say like that person will go to hell because I'm not. And religion doesn't say that the person doesn't cover, this is what she's gonna face. Doesn't say. But it was recommended to cover and be modest. Yeah.
I was in Cairo, Egypt, in a very fancy hotel.
And that's where you used to live. That's where I used to live.
Okay. Yep. And there was a wedding ceremony. So you talk about all this modesty.
Yeah.
And here comes leading the whole wedding procession is belly dancers with very little clothes on.
Yep.
Contradiction?
Yep. It's contradiction. Even in Minneapolis, you will see Somalis cover the hair to top, but then when the wedding comes, you know, but they say like only for females. They're not lost. A lot of weddings in Minnesota, they say only for females. But yeah, the cameraman is it's a male. What is the point of that? They say like female only. But the photographer or the cameraman is a male. So it doesn't make sense. A lot of people, they do that. They contradict themselves. And it's the personal choice. The person, the bride and the groom decides what kind of wedding they're going to have. It's not. I've seen the weddings.
It's not called immodesty then.
Yeah, it's not immodesty. The wedding, for them, it's a time of celebration for the wedding and the family. But if it's only for female and there's no man inside, then that is permissible.
Well, they are coming down the hallway.
Yeah, but even when it's, so, I'm sorry, we have, they call female only, and the guys is sitting there, and that's not permissible. That is not allowed. But they're contradicting themselves. And you see, the Egypt, where the belly dancer is, even if you go to some restaurants, you will belly dance, and you assume she's a Christian, but she's a Muslim. So there's personal choices. It ends up personal choices. But I've seen the one that's very practicing, but when it comes to the wedding, they will say, we want to have a good wedding party. And that, they will see, they say, no men allowed. But the cameraman and the photographer are male, still coming in. I was like, you can have a woman, female photographer, or, you know, camera woman. So I have 5 minutes, so I can take 2-3 questions and answer quickly. Thanks, John. You're doing a good job. 40 minutes. Okay, you can go first, and then.
How does the Muslim religion feel about LGBTQ?
Okay, this is the greatest question. Okay, so there's the Holy Book says something, but now this is for 21st century. People country decide they have their own rule. Whether it's the government, what's the dictator, what's the king, what's the any kind of democracy. The country, each country sets its own, even though 100% or 90% of the population are Muslims. Okay? So I will give you 2 answers. One is my personal, and one was the faith. The book of the Quran. Okay, the Quran is not gonna accept for LGBT and doesn't agree that LGBTQ is not, like in the Quran says, like this shouldn't exist. My personal view to give you, I don't have to judge the human being. I'm not the one who to judge. I have a friends of mine who are part of members for that community, you know? So I respect them, and they are one of the great people, they are one of the greatest people that when I need the help, they help me the most, you know? And we live a short life, so we have to be good to anyone and be friend and care one another. So did you get my answers, 2 different separate answers?
Yeah.
So, that was, yeah.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, yeah, Minnesota, nice.
Yes. In your religion, who do you believe Jesus was?
Okay, we believe Jesus was a prophet, and he had miracles. And like, for example, the miracles where if the person is sick, he could cure. The dead, he could bring them life. And also, there was 2 prophets who were very unique that in terms of creation, among the creations, Adam and Jesus. Because the rest, they came from the human being, like from Adam was created from clay, and Jesus, without parent, without father, God created him.
We
believe that.
God created. Yeah, Jesus
created. So there was only 2 prophets.
Okay.
God created as a creation, not the, you know, like in a miracle way.
Yes.
And also last session I mentioned that Jesus and Abraham, they were the 2 only prophets that were, when they were little, get at the message as a prophet title, because they respond, they believe the oneness of God in Islamic perspective. Because when Abraham was destroying the idols, he asked his tribes and families, and there's asking the biggest idol, he has to tell you who destroyed the rest if he's a God. So he challenged it with them as a kid. And Jesus spoke within a week or 2 weeks old when Mary, Virgin Mary came back to Jerusalem. I'm like, where did you get this boy? Before she said anything, he responded back. He's like, I'm servant of God. And I was sent to you, I was sent by you to deliver the message. So also he had those miracles. So we see him as a prophet, peace be upon him. And we say peace be upon him too. Have 2 minutes or 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't Jesus also the kind of the final judge of Islam?
He will be back. And we believe he's still alive. So Jesus, and he'll be back before time. I will take 1 final question before John got mad. Okay,
Since no one else has one, Sharia law, I was wondering, My mom has gotten these, you know, emails that seem like they're very exaggerated, but they talk about, like, watch out because, you know, some Muslims want Sharia law to take over the law, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So you've probably seen things
I've
like
I've seen
that.
Those, the billboards on the streets, and I've seen those flyers on online. And that's not true. I don't want to change the American Constitution. To me, it's a perfect constitution. The perfect law. I travel a lot of countries, Southeast Asia, Middle East, Africa. This is the best constitution, the best law of the land. Uh-huh. Therefore, it's not going to contradict my religion, my faith. And I'm not willing to change to Sharia. Sharia is kind of the way I live my daily life. Like not eating pork. Not, you know, like drinking alcohol. Respect the land of the law of the land. You know, those kind of things, Sharia for me. Uh-huh. So, but I know this marketing stuff, I've seen it, but totally, it's kind of, you know, not true at all.
Okay.
But thanks for asking for that question.
How do you respond to someone that says that? What's the best way to respond?
The best way is take that information, sit with a Muslim person and ask, what do you believe? Even those advertisements, I've seen it, but doesn't say it's because of this, doesn't say it. It says exactly how you say, like, Sharia law is taking over the country. They're changing our law.
Yeah.
Then how? What an amendment? What, you know, which area? Tell us how it's going to contradict our law and their... Just, they cannot give you details at all. Uh-huh. But it's kind of like, kind of scary.
Yeah.
So, it would be best if they would have detail.
Okay.
They would change this to this. From this to this. They would never, you never see that. But thanks for asking that question. And thank you so much for having me. And thanks for the Holden Village.